Welcome to the inaugural episode of Edgecast. My name is Joshua Gall. I'm the Associate Vice President and Chief Digital Learning Officer here at Edge.
And I'm Dr. Laura Romeo. My position at Edge is an instructional designer.
The first series of episodes of Edgecast is all about accessibility, so we're going to dive into it. You know, the definitions, the benefits, the risks, the questions that institutions should be asking themselves when addressing accessibility, usability, and providing support for differently abled students. It's important stuff, and as Laura will tell you, it's not just about checking a box.
Absolutely. So it's more than just legal compliance, right? Accessibility ensures that every individual, regardless of their ability or disability, can fully participate and succeed in digital learning. A design that prioritizes accessibility is going to go beyond legal requirements. It's going to actively remove those barriers that could hinder or impede certain individuals from fully benefiting from any available digital resources that they have. This approach not only promotes equity, but it's going to future-proof our content and our courses. I believe that anticipating and implementing accessibility measures allows our content to adapt to emerging technologies and standards that are coming up down the pipeline and that are on the horizon. So in the world of digital learning, accessibility is all about crafting and introducing different learning environments and materials. It's about making sure that every student, regardless of their abilities or disabilities, can really fully engage in the educational experience.
A lot of times that falls on the instructional design team and a lot of times the faculty, because some schools just don't have the staffing to do otherwise. So they expect faculty members and instructional designers to understand that, but a lot of times there's not a clear understanding of what exactly that means. For example, a video with captions is only accessible if the captions are actually accurate.
Yeah, that's right, Josh. So as a designer, I try to approach content and course design with the goal of creating a welcoming and inclusive learning environment. I'm always asking myself, how can each student access this in their own way? How do we meet their needs and accommodate whatever comes their way? Of course, it's not always just about meeting needs, but it's about really deeply understanding and accommodating the diverse requirements that come our way as designers and instructors. We have to be really proactive and weave these considerations into how we design and roll out our content. That way, we can make sure the learning experience is seamless and becomes equitable for everyone.
So often people look at it as a hassle, but in truth, a lot of the design processes we put in place because of accessibility requirements help other students too. English second language students, for example, older students. I watch everything with captions on now, so it's good for me too.
Yeah, same. Personally, I find it particularly beneficial whenever I'm pressed for time to pull up a transcript when I'm watching a video. This lets me just kind of scan through and pull out the key points really quickly. So to me, this practice exemplifies accessibility. We offer different ways to engage with and participate in content that's tailored to our own individual needs.
Yeah, you could be sitting in the doctor's office and need to watch a video for class. You know, put it on mute, put the captions on. I watched the entire first season of Game of Thrones on my phone on mute with captions on, sitting in the rocking chair in my son's room when he was 2 years old because he needed us to be in the room when he fell asleep. So it helps everyone.
Accessibility sets the stage for a more flexible learning experience. You're right. It allows us to adapt and engage with content in a way that suits our needs and where we are. It's kind of like creating a space where we can navigate learning with greater ease and versatility.
A lot of people are unfamiliar with the broad spectrum of accessibility. They just assume accessibility means making sure students who are blind or deaf or in a wheelchair can access things on the same level as students who aren't. But it's much broader than that.
So when we're talking about accessibility, we're diving into a whole range of considerations. Take, for example, motor disabilities. It's not just about visuals and sounds, it goes beyond. Think about conditions like paralysis, muscular dystrophy, or cerebral palsy, each bringing its own unique set of challenges. For example, some students might rely on tools like sip and puff systems where they control devices with their breath. Being knowledgeable about these disabilities enables us to proactively plan and create learning environments that really integrate with the tools and strategies students require for their success. So, as designers and instructors, our approach should really revolve around thoughtfulness, careful planning, and creating implementable strategies to accommodate those diverse needs.
Yeah, not everyone can use a mouse, so pages and sites need to have keyboard control. And there's varying levels of accessibility. Not every student who's visually impaired is completely blind. So a lot of those students want to take ownership and say they can still see, just not as well. So they don't want to use screen readers. They want to use other tools like Zoom text to make sure they can hold on to the last bit of sight that they have. None of these people feel disabled. They're part of a community of people that need accessibility and they support each other. They deserve the same access that every one of us has. You know, why should we be ignoring them?
You're right. Emphasizing abilities and addressing disabilities is essential. As designers, I believe our goal is to create an equal environment for everyone. We should be providing strategies that help foster inclusivity and accessibility.
Yeah, one of the biggest, I wouldn't say new categories, but more prevalent categories now is cognitive disabilities. That students that have anxiety, PTSD, things like that, that you don't usually think about as disabilities. They're real disabilities that need to be considered. You know, making all courses have standards and templates, you know, making sure one unit doesn't look completely different than the next unit, making sure students know what to expect when they go into a course, not being surprised by a 100 question quiz that they don't understand the purpose of because it wasn't spelled out in the syllabus anywhere.
So you're exactly right. I feel like if we kind of expand on the significance of addressing these cognitive disabilities, it's really crucial to acknowledge the conditions that you mentioned. And then also, you know, several others like dyslexia, ADHD, memory disorders, executive functioning abilities, ASD or autism spectrum disorders, and intellectual disabilities. These come with challenges and they really encompass a broad range of impacts on learning and information processing. So how someone really processes what they're being presented. I think you gave some great examples of how we can incorporate inclusive practice in online learning environments by standardizing formats and also anticipate and accommodate these specific cognitive challenges.
I mean, there are tons of different levels of accessibility. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, when we're talking about vision, you know, there are people who are completely blind. There are people with very low vision. There are colorblind people. There are people who depending on the contrast of the text versus the background of the page, they can't see it. You know, my oldest son is colorblind, so blue text on a black background or yellow text on a white background can be a problem. So these types of accessibility requirements aren't reported to your Office of Disability Services because they don't view it as an accessibility requirement. You know, so like you mentioned earlier, Laura, being proactive and trying to prevent those requests from needing to come in at all is key and is essential.
Yeah, there's a lot of challenges that come with some critical considerations as designers and instructors. I think when we think about, you know, visually impaired students, they might face obstacles about content that heavily relies on visual elements without providing alternative text or audio descriptions. Similarly, a deaf or hard of hearing student might find it really challenging when it's the opposite, when learning materials heavily depend on spoken content without those captions or transcripts, like we were talking about earlier. So I think a big question comes down to, we have to ask ourselves, what tools and strategies can we implement and provide to make content more accessible?
Exactly. You know, what tools do we use? What tools can we get involved early on? You know, not every student that has an auditory disability is deaf or hard of hearing. You know, sometimes it's a processing problem, almost like how dyslexic people can read, but it's more difficult for them to process words. So it's the same idea, not the same disability, but a similar disability to others. So you have to account for all of them. So in my previous work with Empire was focused on adult learning. So a lot of my accessibility experience comes from working with adults who have accessibility needs and the faculty members that teach them. I mentioned earlier about the whole idea of different levels of accessibility. I had an instructor I worked with at Empire all the time who used to tell me that she's not blind. She has vision impairment. So the text on her desktop was so crazy zoomed in, really zoomed in. And it always had really high contrast settings, you know, the colors being very bright. So her needs are different from a fully blind student or a fully blind instructor, which are different from a regular, non-differently abled student or a faculty member. you know, it was an eye-opening experience for me watching how she worked and watching how her experience was so drastically different than what I usually dealt with.
Yeah, so if we're, you know, reflecting on our experiences, for me, accessibility has really played kind of a critical role throughout my teaching career. And then as I've moved into my instructional design era, in the early stages, I encountered diverse student needs, those on 504 plans and IEPs. This really made me think about my teaching methods, and I started to begin to understand that a one-size-fits-all approach didn't work. It wasn't conducive to their learning. So I had to start thinking about different ways in which I could present information, how students engaged with their content, and what choices I gave that they could choose from on how they demonstrated what they learned. So fast forward to a few years ago, the pandemic for me brought some unexpected transitions. When I taught a face-to-face class and content, I had to move it into an online format, adapting my in-person content to meet the needs of students who were logging into now a virtual platform was challenging for me. I had to think about how to keep everyone engaged and provide flexibility, how to cater not just to those who needed that extra support, but to everyone who was logging in. Interestingly, I found that integrating tools like transcripts for videos, closed captions for live recordings, back channel chat groups, and choice boards for project products really brought some unexpected positive feedback. Students found a new way of learning that suited their preferences, and it also allowed me as an instructor and a designer to reevaluate my own teaching practices.
Yeah, I think we touched on with the pandemic shone a light on a lot of different ways we have to look at things. You know, one of those was the HyFlex model that became more popular since the pandemic, though it's been around for 20 years. It's actually encouraged accessibility in the idea of creating different modalities for the same course. So students who can't make it to class in person need to watch online after the fact. So you record these lectures and then you caption them. You know, students can also join live via video conference platforms like WebEx or Zoom. You know, it gives instructors and instructional designers a way to look at their courses a little differently and say, okay, if I wasn't just an in-person student, how can I succeed in this course and be given the same support and the same access in a different way, or at least as close to the same access as possible? And that's what we've been doing with accessibility for years, you know, trying to create a different way to access instructional material and activities without taking out the learning part.
Yeah, I feel like as I've kind of progressed through my career, my primary takeaway in advocating for accessibility is just making sure that what we offer benefits not just students with disabilities, but all learners. It should involve thinking about the content and considering how students are going to navigate a course, how they're going to engage with and process information, and ultimately how they're going to be the most successful in walking away with what they need to learn.
Well, I think, you know, for an introduction, I think we've done a pretty good job. So let's bring it to a close this week. I thank everybody for watching. So join us next time. And until then, this is Edgecast signing off.